Travel writer Tony Parate has spent his career traveling all over the globe, but he always chose exotic places like Tierra del Fuego or the Amazon over predictable Paris or Rome, until he discovered the oldest surviving guidebook. It's a second century tour of Greece, and he decided to recreate the tour, following in the footsteps of the ancients. He told Steve Paulson that traveling hasn't much changed since the Romans invented tourism.
Literature has a litany of complaints about inns in ancient times, about their rock-hard mattresses and their leaky roofs and the staff who are sullen and surly and the innkeepers who are demented. And at all these places, you could also get food as well. There were little restaurants in all these inns. And much like today, people would complain about the food. There were always rumours of human flesh turning up in the stews and knuckle bones and things like that. And in fact, the people who stayed in these inns as well, there was Plutarch is always complaining about the company that you would find yourself stuck with at night. And he actually advises that you hum to yourself in the dining room to drown out the drivel of the other travelers.
So once you actually started to read about all of this stuff, you did something rather unusual. You retraced the route of these ancient Roman tourists. So why did you want to do that?
I'd always loved ancient history, and I had studied Latin and Greek back in Australia, where I was brought up. And I had actually intended to go, naturally, to see the great sites of Italy and Greece and Asia Minor in Egypt. But when I left Australia, I made it as far as India, and it was so fascinating and so amazing and so cheap that I ended up staying for months. And I began to see the Mediterranean as a place that had been so overrun by tourists since the 1960s. There was nothing new or fresh that I could see there. So once I found all this information, I thought, what an incredible way to see the Mediterranean in a fresh way, looking at it through the eyes of the ancient tourists, and in fact, going to all these places that were in fact identified as tourist sites first by the ancient Romans.
What was the general route that you took?
Following the greatest hits of the Romans, really, which is really, if you were doing a Wonders of the Mediterranean tour today, it's very similar. They started off in Rome, obviously, and then it was a very easy run along the Via Appia down to the Bay of Naples, which was the first great seaside resort of antiquity, and that was where the beautiful villas were, and that was where it was very sensual and hedonistic lifestyle. It was the first real association of sun, sand, and sex. Everyone would just hang there for the summer, and they would eat an incipient form of bouillabaisse bays by the water and swim in these beautiful little bays, protected bays that they built. From there, they would then go to Greece, which was kind of like the old world for the Romans. And so they would start off in Athens, where the philosophers had all lived and spoken, and they would go to the Academy of Plato, and they'd go to Socrates' birthplace and things like that. They would go to Delphi, where the Oracle of Apollo had been. And then they would cut across the Aegean, hopping in merchant ships, much as we sort of go on these little Greek ferries today. And they would go over to the coast of Asia Minor, which is now Turkey. The goal was to go to Troy. And for Romans, that was like the Jerusalem of ancient times. They, having read Homer, they loved to go to the site where all this had occurred. And they could actually, there were little battlefield tours where people would show them around, where all the events had occurred, where Priam had fallen, where Achilles had chased Hector around the walls and things like that.
And that was all, I suppose, very real history for them. I mean, this was just some ancient mythological kind of site that they were visiting.
No, absolutely, absolutely. There was very little distinction made between history and mythology. It all blurred and overlapped. And to actually be on this place that they'd read about since childhood was an extraordinary thing for them. And they would go around and they would carry their copies of Homer, and most of them actually knew it all by heart. But anyway, from Troy, they would head down to Egypt, and Egypt was very unusual and it was incredibly exotic. Mostly Romans weren't that interested in other cultures. They thought the Greco-Roman culture was the best. But Egypt, it was just so undeniably ancient and so undeniably bizarre that it was an ongoing fascination for Romans. But there you would hire guides and you would arrange a Nile cruise, basically. And from Alexandria, you could just go up to the pyramids, which had fascinated people since Herodotus. When you were there, the shaven-headed priests of Egypt would tell the same sort of bizarre stories that they still tell today. They would be going on about how the pyramids went down into the sand as far as they went up. They would say that one of the pyramids had been financed by the pharaoh prostituting his daughter out. all these sorts of bizarre stories are just passed on.
Now, I got the impression as I was reading your book that sex was a fairly big draw for a lot of these tourists, that for some, they clearly wanted to indulge, and there were places that were famous as erotic hotspots, I guess.
Definitely. I think sex and travel have always been intertwined, actually, and for the Romans, who were a little bit sexually obsessed, it very much was so, and the Bay of Naples was probably the most famous of the places to go, and especially in summer. For example, if you visited the Villa of Tiberius, you could go up there and there would be tours showing around. They're showing the paintings from Elephantus that were on his walls, his erotic paintings, and hear about the Sprintrii, who were his adepts at unnatural practices, and he used to swim in his pools there, and little boys would dress up as minnows, and according to Suetonius, they would swim with him and nibble at his parts as he swam around. But very much so, erotic art was very important. And one of the great erotic pieces was the Aphrodite of Cnidos, which was over in the coast of Asia Minor. And that was one of the great ones to go to. It was actually the first female nude. The most erotic art is really in the brothels of Pompeii have some very, very interesting pieces, actually. In the brothels, they had the little stalls that the women worked in. Above each one was a little painting showing the prostitute's speciality. And those are still there, and they're the most popular things to see in Pompeii. In fact, there's this logjam of people trying to get in and out, you know, jabbering on in all languages, discussing these images. So sex still sells.
Well, did you feel that the world that you were experiencing was anything like the world that these ancient Roman tourists would have seen 2,000 years ago?
Well, I think that the archetypal experiences of travel haven't changed. The technology has, and the physical condition of the sites has obviously changed. But I found that when you ended up in these very unlikely situations, you can't sort of have these connections back to the past. And they would tend to be more improbable ones, like when we were lost in the mountains of Arcadia, and you're surrounded by mist, and you'd basically be seeing exactly what the Romans would have seen. Or in Egypt as well. Egypt is quite an extraordinary place because what the Romans saw in the 1st and 2nd century ADs, with some exceptions, was very much what we see today. The ruins of Luxor are very much the same now as they were then. The Sphinx, the pyramids are still as amazing now as they were then. There's one that still has its limestone coping. It's called the Bent Pyramid. That's quite an extraordinary experience because when you go out there, it takes a few hours driving through the desert. Nothing around. It's just like barren to the horizon all around. And then it just rises from the road as you're coming down this valley. And it's quite an incredible experience. And even though we were not on camelback, you can still have that imaginative leap and get a feeling for how ancient Roman sightseers, who were, after all, interested in the same things that we were, how it must have been very similar for them.
Tony Paratay's book about traveling like an ancient Roman tourist is called Pagan Holiday.